Hello, you're watching HR TV. Today from the HR conference of People Management Forum in the Czech Republic in Prague. And my dear guest for today is Daniel Hoffman. Hello, Daniel.
Hi.
Daniel, you're the founder and the chief consultant and management consultant of, and now correct me if I say it wrong, it's Core Quality International.
That's correct, yes.
Which is a company that's based on your well-known theory of using core quadrants.
Yes.
Quadrants. Yeah. Can you explain to our viewers briefly what your theory is based on and how are the practical applications of it?
Well, the concept is very simple. It's based on that every human being has a number of qualities that he or she was born with, you know, like persistence, caring, flexibility, empathy, determination. There are hundreds of words for that. And everybody has a few of those. And that's one part. But with every quality, you get three, it has three consequences. And the first one is you have your pitfall, which is too much of your core quality. The other one is your challenge, which is the opposite of your pitfall. And the last one is your allergy, which is too much of your challenge. Well, that's in a few seconds, the basic principle, and and the beauty of the quadrant is that's empty. There's nothing inside, so you can fill it with your own words. Like, you know, if you were born with determination, your pitfall may be something like pushiness, too determined. Your challenge may be something like patience, and your allergy may be too patient, like passivity. So this is an example, or flexibility, and too much flexible is wishy-washy, and the opposite is more consistent, which could be your challenge, and the allergy is rigidity. So every quality has these other three aspects, like pitfall, challenge, and allergy. That's in a few words the essence, and this is all about becoming more aware of these aspects, because it determines very much your interactions with everybody, with your private life, your partner, your children, but also your colleagues, your clients, your customers. So having more awareness about how you color your own behavior with your core qualities is what is my work.
This is something what I remember from your presentation, and what actually surprised me most and what I actually liked most is that, at least understand it correctly, is that you try to explain that you're not here, or we are not here to change our behavior or to develop ourselves, but rather to look in our inner mirror, or to see ourselves in a mirror and to better understand our equipment or what our characteristics or the tools we have, and to maybe operate it more efficiently and be more aware of our deeds. Is it?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, because I really stress the point that I think we are addicted to change. We make change a goal in our life, which I say makes sense. If you, for example, want to redecorate a building or a room, yes, you know what you want, and you go after that. You have a goal. You're goal oriented, and it's all about wanting to change something and wanting to be in control. That makes sense on the physical level, but in the inner side, that way of thinking doesn't work. It's not about changing, it is really about getting to know yourself and trusting that when you know yourself and you accept yourself as you are, you will change as a result. So we put so much pressure on people that they should change, the word should comes in, that it's not needed. And I think it creates a lot of unnecessary pressure, frustration in people. And so my approach is much more non-violent, and it's much more gentle and more difficult, because, you know, seeing the different aspects of yourself is not easy. Your pitfall is not nice, your allergy is not nice, but it's part of us. So it's more important to embrace that and to acknowledge that it's a part of you, and as a result of that, change will happen. Well, that's a pretty radical shift from what I see a lot in businesses, that we apply the kind of thinking that works in the physical world, we apply that to our own. So the part of my story is also about different ways of thinking. Your inner world cannot be treated the same as we use the outer world.
Usually when people call for change, it's in a situation when they need to face a problem, a challenge. When the call for change comes from the outside, and maybe we are overwhelmed by that. And this is the point where in the beginning, people call for coaches or for people who will help them change, for lectors. If it's upgraded, we may go to a psychiatric practice and call for better change. But my question is, when organizations or people come to you and say, we have this problem and I need to change my behavior because I understand that if I behave this way, I am not able to solve it, what might be your answer based on your theory of the core quadrant?
Again, you know, it's good to look at aspects of yourself. If you feel you misbehave or your behavior doesn't fit in the environment where you are working, of course you have to look at that, and then look at your own response to that. But don't make change the goal. Make your awareness the goal. Learn to reflect. If you build reflection into your life, anytime. Not, you know, just once a week, but develop the capacity to reflect as you are acting, as you are speaking, as you are working, and that capacity to observe yourself in action is much more productive than, you know, going into an artificial setting or training program in which you are sort of trying to change yourself. Again and again, I keep saying, look at what the environment asks of you and find your own response. Don't create artificial behavior, because that won't last. Find your answer. And my answers and my way of interacting is colored by the different qualities that I have, and yours is the same. I shouldn't try to copy you. You shouldn't try to copy me. Find your own color. In your interactions with anybody, that's far more effective, as long as you make sure that your quality and your challenge are united. Yeah? Be patiently determined, determinedly patient, that kind of stuff, that you don't make it an either or.
Can you explain maybe on a real life example from your past or from your clients, any situation where you were just faced with a problem that the client expected you to help him change her or himself or the organization or the unit just to be able to solve this problem more efficiently?
Well, I would not accept an assignment like that. I would not go into a situation where people say, I want you to change me. I mean, I'm not in that. That would be very arrogant to think that I can do that. I can help people to find out their own qualities and how they color whatever they do with these qualities, how it sort of becomes ineffective when it becomes pitfalls. I can help people to look at that, and that more than that I cannot do, and I don't want to do more than that. So I would not accept an assignment if they say, well, as a result of our conversation, I have to be more da-da-da-da. That's the wrong starting point, in my opinion. So if you want to do that, find a therapist or a counselor or a coach who thinks he can do that. I don't believe it, but, you know, don't believe me. If you work with me, this is what you will get.
What I also liked in your presentation was that you don't need people to search definitely for balance. We're saying that it's perfect to be imbalanced. It's perfect if you're have the talent to do too much of some trait. You just do it. Just do it. But just think that there might be a pitfall from it. Is it correct?
I mean, balance is not a static state. We are never completely balanced. In a way, we are always out of balance. But the point is that the moment you realize that you're out of balance, that's the moment you become more effective. Don't think that you can be in a state of being balanced all the time. That's pretty arrogant. I mean, I have never met anybody who is completely balanced. If you were all the time, I think you're enlightened. I have not met anybody who is enlightened. So nobody is perfect. But it's to discover your imperfection and use your awareness to look at what you are doing, to see how it has an impact on other people, and learn to relax more rather than push yourself. I mean, what I do encourage people to do sometimes is to imagine yourself being as you want to be. That's a useful exercise. And the moment you sort of feel that you're not very smart, that you sort of remember that image. Imagination is very important. But that's different from forcing yourself or judging yourself. It's like creating a magnet, having an image. If I see myself being assertive and at the same time having empathy, for example, I can imagine myself being like that. Make that image sort of come alive. And the moment you feel you're out of balance, the moment you reconnect with that image, you come much, much closer to being more balanced.
Can you explain the concept of allergy in your quadrant and its usefulness in different situations? You were describing the two partners leading an organization being quite alike, maybe. Can you explain to our viewers the importance of the concept of allergy?
Yeah, the allergy is in a way the most fascinating part of the quadrant, because it's the one part that we have the least awareness about. But it's also the part of us that triggers the strongest emotions. When your allergy is the thing you dislike, you have judgments about, you despise in other people, and it usually, as I mentioned in the presentation, your problem is not your pitfall. If you are determined and you know you're sometimes pushy, pushiness is not your problem. Your problem is your allergy. If you are allergic to passivity, that will trigger your pushiness. So become aware of the thing you hate the most, because it has the greatest impact in how your behavior becomes ineffective. And this works on an individual level, and it works very much on a collective level as well. I mean, I see all those organizations, for example, working on cultural change, having no awareness about the collective allergy. And the biggest problem in any culture is the collective allergy. It's the thing we hate the most, because that prevents us from developing what we need. And the lack of awareness I find mind-blowing. I just don't understand why in so many organizations, whether it's a school or a hospital or a production facility, that on management levels, people don't invest more in identifying what is our collective allergy. But one way to do that, I sometimes ask people, what is the fastest way to be thrown out? What do you have to do in this organization to immediately be thrown out? Obviously, that's the case when you hit collective allergy. It's not supposed to be there. It has to be eradicated. It is what you judge, what you don't want, what you're fighting all the time. And anybody who shows that behavior is in trouble. But at the same time, that very sort of allergic behavior that you use is too much of your challenge. That connection is hardly ever made. So it's easy to say, we all need to be more, for example, more business oriented. Which of course sounds like a solid idea. If you're too business oriented, you can become ruthless or cold. So the moment somebody comes in and in an organization says, well, you have to develop more business orientedness, the person that comes will be blamed for being cold and ruthless. You will trigger the collective allergy the moment you show the behavior that we want. That is just so. In a way, it's very funny. But it's also painful. I mean, the people you need the most are the people who have the hardest time and have the greatest possibility to be thrown out. So you often see that. You know, we hire a new person in there for the department because he exactly brings in the thing that we need. But if it's a little bit too much of that, he triggers the collective allergy. And if you have no awareness about that, cultural change is a myth. Nothing will change. And the reason why nothing will change is not because we don't know what we want, but we have no awareness of the mechanisms that are triggered by allergies and pitfalls. So, and at the same time, I'm not saying you should focus mainly on what you don't want, pitfalls and allergies. My message is focus on what you want to keep, your qualities, what you want to use, and focus on what you want to add. Don't focus on the negatives, focus on the positive, because what you pay attention to is growth. If you pay attention to your allergies, allergies will grow. If you pay attention to pitfalls, pitfalls grow. But the same is true for your qualities and your challenges. If you pay attention, it will grow. So it's just a matter of what you are, where you pay your attention to. So this is also a part of the story.
I like the example you also mentioned during your presentation about your work with a Swedish company. And at a time when you asked them what is the biggest allergy to them, they anonymously answered that it was Ibrahimovic, yes. And why was it in this strict... did it raise such high emotions in them?
Because it's funny. This is the person who hits the collective allergy in a tremendous way. And at the same time, they admire him because he has this quality that they know they need, but a little bit too much immediately from admiration, like they admire him, but they also hate him. So this was such a beautiful example of a simple individual who exactly represents this thing that we know. They know that what they want, they know what they need to be more decisive, to be more, you know, take more risks, stick out your neck, that kind of stuff. They know that. But what keeps them from doing that is this allergy of, you know, making yourself fantastic and sort of playing almighty God yourself. That's not done in that sort of environment. And it was just a nice example because it was so fast. Before they could speak, you know, we didn't need an hour to discuss that. I said, what? I think I asked, who represents the thing you dislike the most as a nation, as a collective? And boom, and there it was. It doesn't always go that fast, but I just had to laugh. It was so easy. And so on the collective level, for example, I had another group that said, our collective quality is we all take care of ourselves. We're very good at taking care of ourselves. Our pitfall is we only take care of ourselves. Our challenge is to take care of each other. Here you have three aspects of your quadrant within a few minutes. It says, oh, okay, so you're Jay. You're saying our challenge is that we take care of each other. Is that really what you want? So it's not difficult to identify what we need. But then the allergy comes in. The first one who does that will trigger that allergy. Again, you know, the same story, collectively, individually. And sometimes it's easier to start with cultural quadrants or team quadrants because, you know, you're talking, you're applying the concept not directly on yourself, but on something outside yourself. And you learn the language of the quadrant by applying it to something which is less close to yourself. So that can be a handy strategy. Not always, but especially if you have an environment where it's not very safe, to start with personal qualities can be sometimes one step too fast. And then I start with team quadrants or, you know, departmental quadrants. And then people very quickly start to say, hey, wait a minute, this also works for me. and they make the connection themselves. So I use it in so many different situations. And the funny thing is the result is always, it inspires people. I never have had a negative experience applying core coordinates in groups, in individuals, because the main focus is to let's look at what's okay in yourself, let's look at what's okay in us, and let's see how we can make it even more fun by adding the challenge to it. We're not looking at what's wrong, what has to change, what's the problem, what do we have to fix. In that kind of thinking usually creates more problems. So it's not problem solving. I think that's an important message. I'm not problem solving. I'm trying to raise awareness, become more conscious of these different things. And I see the impact of it. I mean, I see companies change in a much faster way than the ones that are working hard. This driving force in us that we are addicted to change. We are addicted to being in control, which is fine if you work in, talk about projects, but people are not projects. That requires a different approach. So let's not mix up what works in the outer world, and that's why I often describe it as different planets. You have the inner planet, you have the outer planet. And I often see that we apply what works outside, we apply it to our inner world. And then I say, no, that's a different planet. So become more sort of trilingual. Learn to speak the languages of the inner world, of the outer world, and of the world of relationships. So and the quadrants are an ideal tool for that. And of course the goal is not, in the end, the goal is not that everybody knows their quadrants. For me, I always say, the world is not waiting for people who know their core quadrants. But the world is waiting for people who have more awareness about themselves, and quadrants can help in that, but that they can translate that awareness into effective choices that create a better life for themselves, a better life with your people around you, so that you make choices that are more fulfilling, more satisfying, more effective. And the quadrant in itself is a tool and can sometimes be treated very superficially, and it can be very deep. It can be a very deep experience to really connect with the things that you become aware of that makes you the beautiful side of yourself. So it's, yeah. Well, I can go on and on and on. So.
Daniel, my last question, which probably should have been the first question, is that you have been in this, I would say business, but it's not business, in this philosophy, maybe four quadrants. You've been dealing with this philosophy of four quadrants since the 80s, maybe since the 70s or 80s. How did it come on your mind that you can actually not only judge the strong parts of yourself but also the pitfalls? And was there any like a blink where you just said, okay, this might work, or how did you put together these four quadrants?
Well, I was in a group playing with this idea of qualities and distortions of qualities, which are now called pitfalls. And I noticed that every quality can become too much. I just read that somewhere. And at a certain point, I suddenly, it was really a matter of seconds or maybe minutes during a lunch break when I often go for a walk just by myself, 15 minutes, and I suddenly saw the quality and the pitfall and the challenge and the reality. And it may have been taken only a few seconds or a few minutes, and then that was it. And then I drew back, I walked back to the group, drew it on a flip chart. I just came up with this idea, had no idea how it would affect the rest of my life. But then I noticed that other people, they liked the idea, started to play with it, use it. My colleagues, my business partner said, you know, if you don't write a book about this, somebody else will. So I thought, oh, yeah, that would be sad, because I liked it myself. So I wrote my first book, and I thought, okay, that's finished. Now I can do something else, move on. But that's when it started. And the book became a huge bestseller. It sold 120,000 copies just in the Dutch language, which is one of the biggest bestsellers in the Netherlands. So our business grew, and we got more and more requests for trainer-trainer programs. It evolved very rapidly, and it spread very quickly. So it became very well known in my own country. And then about 7-8 years ago, I thought, I'm interested to find out how the rest of the world responds to this, because I knew it would go all over the planet. I just didn't know whether I would be part of it. And it's very nice to be a part of it and to see it growing and to see it spreading and to see enthusiasm when I work in Russia or in China or in United States or wherever. Everywhere where I go, I see a lot of very positive responses. And sometimes for very different reasons, because it touches on different cultural aspects. Like in the States, they are addicted to action plans. Every meeting has to finish with an action plan. And my story is, it's not about action plan. You don't have to make an action plan. That's not what this is all. And people are just flabbergasted. What? Can it be that we have a meeting and we have no action plan? And then suddenly you see, so sigh of relief. Holy Moses, there's another thing than making an action plan. So that's what happens in the States. In Russia, there's no country where they speak so easily about their pitfalls. And they have so much fun sharing their pitfalls and talking about it and chatting and laughing about it. And I noticed it and I said, really strikes me that it's so easy for you to talk about the pitfalls. And they said, finally, something from the West that fits our culture. I said, what do you mean? And they said, well, in the West, you have divided, you have split good and bad. Quality is good, pitfall is bad. We know that there's a spectrum, a little bit too much. We know that this concept, for have always known this. So that's also why we sometimes, you know, we drink too much vodka, we get drunk. It's simply a bit too much of something good. So for them, it's not a big deal. So it makes them laugh about it. So for the very different responses in different cultures, but always nice. And it's always like it. So it hits something that fits with their heritage.
Which is universal.
It is. That's why I said, you know, I did not invent the core form. It's a universal principle. I just happened to give it words, so that it's more easy accessible, and that's so I consider it as a gift. It's nice to see the impact and how, you know, I have letters of a father who said I can now again talk to my son because I understand that his pitfall is my allergy. So that's why we always are fighting each other. So stories like that, it's sometimes very moving to see how it helps people to create different relationships, better companies, more inspiring working environments. So what else could you ask for?
Daniel, thank you very much. It was a great pleasure to have you here, and wish you best luck to your work in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you.